It's no mistake that car culture is a dominant force in modern American society. Our cities and towns have been built around the notion that people will utilize motor vehicles for many of their daily duties. But the roads and streets that have been built to accommodate these vehicles are also used by pedestrians and cyclists, people who may be engaged in recreational activity or transportation to work and shopping. Either way, there are a lot of users, and some cities and communities are more advanced than others when it comes to building and maintaining safe infrastructure for all. My guest today is Chris Pittman, the director and founder of Panhandle Active Transportation and Health, serving the Amarillo and Canyon area. And we're going to dive into what is necessary for a community to accommodate multiple user types and the benefits for doing so. Roll the intro. You're listening to Buff Speak, the official podcast of the Paul and Virginia Engler College of Business at West Texas A&M University. I am Dr. Nick Gerlich, your host, as we meet up with the thought leaders making an impact today. Welcome to the show, Chris. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Thanks, Nick. Excited to be here. Yeah, so my name, Chris Pittman. I'm founder, director of Panhandle Active Transportation Health, or PATH for short. It's kind of a long name, but I've been an avid cyclist my whole life. My bicycle was my primary form of transportation up until I was about 20 years old, and even as a young adult, it was often my transportation of choice. And riding all my whole life, and I started to notice some things that kind of felt a little off as I've traveled and moved across the country. And especially as I've come here in our, you know, wonderful Panhandle towns, I realized I stopped biking altogether. we have our wonderful state park that I love to go to. And before I moved here permanently, that was one of my criteria for my family is, hey, one weekend or one day of the time I'm here, I'm going to go bike at the canyon. But as I've been trying to, you know, do a little bit more, I've recognized that there's some things missing in our communities, in our infrastructure. And that's prompted me to figure out how to make that a little bit better, not just for myself, but for the community as a whole.
And when did you form PATH?
So we are really new. We just started officially formed October of last year, 2024. And it kind of started with just a little bit of, you know, just talking with people. I would visit here in Canyon. We have the wonderful Palador Outfitters and Bike Company. And so chatting with them, and we recognize this as, you know, individuals, and then just talking more about it. And we're like, hey, it's too bad we can't do something about it. And then we're like, wait a minute, we can do something about it. And somebody had mentioned Strong Towns, which is a national movement that deals with how our communities are built. And one of the, I love how they say it, the indicator species of a healthy community is the number of people walking and cycling. And so we kind of went down this Strong Towns path. And I tell you what, as I started learning more and more about it, it really was the missing puzzle piece to a lot of things that I hope we'll dive into today that really helped me put a lot of things together for me that I've been recognizing or experiencing personally, but also collectively as a community. And so after researching Strong Towns a little bit, we've made our own chapter officially, like I said, in October, and we have filed for a 501c3.
Yeah, nonprofit.
Yeah, thank you. Filed for that, and we're hoping that will be finalized in the next couple of months.
A lot has changed in the U.S. through the years. I remember when I was a kid, and that was a long time ago, but I could walk, ride a bike anywhere. And I grew up in the south suburbs of Chicago, and it was safe to do it in the 1960s and the 1970s, not a problem. But, well, today, our population is much bigger, but we've got nearly 300 million registered vehicles on the road. That's a lot of vehicles. And it's never been that vehicle intensive before in our history. And it just signifies, how we have embraced the vehicle as a means of getting around. And it's not a bad thing. I mean, I don't know what I do without my motor vehicles. That's how I do a lot of things. But at the same time, a big part of me misses what I had when I was a little kid, that ability to also go on foot or on two wheels or however I wanted to get there.
You know, and it's sad that you mentioned that, you know, growing up and being able to bike, because that's how, like I mentioned, you know, that's how I was from the age, you know, I don't remember a time in my life I did not own a bicycle. And I don't really remember a time in my life where my mom or dad had to drive me to school to a friend's house. If I wanted to go to, well, whether or not I wanted to go to school, I had to bike there. That was, you know, it wasn't my only option, but it was my A option and the primary option. Likewise, if I wanted to go to a friend's house, I had the autonomy, I had the freedom to do so. And now I look at, you know, my son, I have a 15-year-old, and as, you know, he's gotten older, I recognize that he has not had that freedom. He hasn't had the autonomy to travel wherever he wants without mom or dad assisting him. And it's just so sad, because now he's, you know, he's going through permits and getting that. And it's like, yeah, we celebrate this time that he gets a vehicle, because it's more than just the ability to drive. It's now the ability to be independent, to make a decision on where he wants to go and who he visits or whatnot. Before then, he was always, I don't want to call him a burden, but I'm sure in his mind, he probably thinks of himself as a burden of mom and dad have to take me. And I hate to say it, but most families are a dual income household now. And so picking him up from school, taking him to a friend's house, like those are all things that, you know, become very burdensome, and it limits his exposure to our world. And so that's kind of what has started me on this journey, is I miss, you know, when, just as you was described, you know, being on the bike everywhere when you were a child, I miss that for my son, because I experienced that as well.
Now, PATH is not at all a political entity. This is, it's a movement, right?
Correct. Yeah. And that's what I think is so great about this is, you know, we're not team red, we're not team blue, or, you know, team any other color. Mm-hmm. This is simply about putting people first and recognizing that we can make our streets, no matter how you choose to travel. I still own a car and I don't plan on getting rid of all my cars. But allowing people to have the freedom to choose how they travel, because right now it often feels that we don't have the freedom to go anywhere except with a vehicle, a personal vehicle.
Now, I live out in the country, but I'm close to Canyon, so I spend a lot of time here. Obviously, I work in Canyon, and so I love this small town. I consider this such an easy town to get around. I walk everywhere.
Yeah.
I'll walk to lunch, the post office, the bank. It doesn't matter. I just walk to walk. And there have been times like this last weekend after the tornado and all that rain we had, my place out in the country was a little, it was muddy.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So I drove to town, parked my van, and went out and walked 6 miles just around town because it's just so inviting. And I'll tell you, and I know you know this, you really get to know a town when you're on foot.
Absolutely.
You can't, even on a bike, you don't see everything. But when you're on foot going only 3 or 4 miles an hour, it's hard to miss things.
Yeah. And I think that's – I'm glad you brought up Canyon, because it is such an ideal place for what we call human-sized infrastructure or human-sized town, where you can walk pretty much anywhere in town. If you get yourself on a bike, then it really opens up your possibilities. But yeah, you think about the difference from in your car and you're driving past the square and you'll miss all these little shops. You know, even on a bicycle, you said you slow things down a little bit more, but then when you're walking, you can window shop a little bit more, and it invites people in. And that's actually, you know, we can talk a lot about benefits of walking bikeable cities, but that's a huge benefit for these little shops is it by having people walk, they spend more time in your area, spending money and helping the local economy. And so when we've got a very touristy area, having it be walkable and bikeable should be the number one priority for our tourism committees and groups.
So if people are spending the night in any of our fine motels, they don't have to feel like they need to load up the car to, just to go eat dinner or something. They just walk to it.
Walk and experience Canyon. Mm-hmm. Come and walk down the square, check out all of our fine little boutiques and shops. Yeah, you don't need to drive there. Come experience Canyon on foot or, you know, on bike or rollerblade or however else you want to.
One of the things that I have noticed everywhere I walk, and for what it's worth, when I'm driving to Dallas or something to visit my daughter and her husband, I have stopped in just about every small town between here and Dallas to get out and walk.
Yeah.
And I love doing that. I'll take pictures. I'm just soaking up some history and the flavor of that small town. But every time I do it, I also see the deficiencies too. Like if I find myself having to walk in the street, that means there's no sidewalk.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, well, why wasn't there a sidewalk put in? And it just shows, I guess, the evolution of thought through time. When cars were becoming more popular, I think the idea of walking or biking somewhere just kind of got deprecated, and we don't need to do that anymore. Everybody's going to be driving forever and ever and ever. And well, as we know now, that's not necessarily the case. The problem, though, is, you know, it's hard to retrofit a bunch of sidewalks, and that costs a lot of money, too. So, you know, how can PATH work within those parameters?
You know, it's unfortunate that we have to kind of, I don't want to say reinvent the wheel, but like go backwards. Like we almost progress too far, right? We let our technology drive us rather than letting society determine how we use technology. And as we've been working at PATH, as we've been working trying to encourage smart things, smart development, with recently in Amarillo, we've been advocating and working with the city there for Safe Streets for All. And so this is a program to help reprioritize how streets are built and also gives a little bit of funding on addressing some areas. The concern, however, is that the smallest project that they currently have funded is $750,000. And, you know, here in Canyon, they have a program or a plan to connect the intermediary and middle school. And I don't recall how much that is off the top of my head, but it is essentially the entire amount of new funds that Canyon will have. For 2026, I think, is the current plan for that project. And so, yeah, trying to get, as you said, retrofit things with a very limited amount of money when things can cost so much, I think is really helpful where we've leaned quite a bit on strong towns and what they call the next smallest step. What is the smallest thing that we can do to make this one intersection safer? This one street safer. And often when we look at it in those smaller pieces, it doesn't cost hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars. We can get away with it with a few thousands of dollars. Something as simple as putting paint down can really resize what our streets look and feel like. Putting up some plastic bollards, small steps to really show how our streets could be. I've seen it where just temporary things like hay bales or just plastic cones, you know, chalk, anything, just these temporary solutions to kind of show what could be and help people start, I want to say, remembering what our streets used to be like when the people were first rather than focusing on moving cars fast.
Now, I'm gonna step out on a limb here and say,
sure.
Well, I bet when you were a young kid, you probably walked to school, right?
I bike almost exclusively.
Okay, but
yeah.
You didn't rely on mom and or dad to drive you.
No. In fact, waking up dad was the last thing I wanted to do because I had to go early in the morning before he often woke up. But no, I did not rely on mom or dad. On the very rare occasion that it was bad weather, then I would arrange a ride.
And the same for me. I know this sounds cliche and everything. Honestly, it was not uphill both ways, but but I did walk a mile to high school. And that was just... that was just part of my daily activity. So I got 2 miles of walking every day. You know, side benefit. I got exercise. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize it at the time, but there was no way I could ever begin to imagine my parents driving me to school. And yet that's the way it's done today, it seems like.
Yeah, I biked my high school. I actually looked this up earlier today just to, I was curious because I've never known, because as a kid, you don't really pay attention to distance or whatever. It's just, this is how far you go, because that's where the school is. It was almost just short of 4 miles each direction on my bike.
Oh, that's great. I mean, so you got 8 miles of
biking.
8 miles
a day. Yeah. And, you know, I think about now, we talk about now, when my son entered middle school, we were about a mile and a half away from his middle school. Which, I mean, you talked about, you walked a mile every day. So biking a mile and a half is nothing. Man, that was probably some of the scariest bike riding I've ever done. And it actually, again, that's kind of one of the things that put me on this advocacy path. I was so frustrated that something as simple as biking to school was just terrifying for me as someone who's been cycling their entire life, who, you know, that was my primary form of transportation. And yet I was terrified, and I would never, ever let my son bike to school by himself. And that really broke my heart that my son was going to be denied this opportunity, this experience. And instead we, you know, unfortunately it wasn't until many years later that I finally kind of learned how to maybe correct some of these things. But, you know, we joined the car drop off lane with everybody else. And yeah, he now, you know, doesn't get that experience, that time to be free to travel on his own.
I'm really glad that WT is such a bikeable and walkable campus. It wasn't always this way, but now we've got the bike lanes along Russell Long Boulevard, and we've got entire streets on campus that have been turned into a pedestrian mall, which makes it so easy to just walk safely from one building to the next all the way across campus. But I remember when they were making that change, there were a lot of people that kind of felt like they were being dragged, kicking and screaming into this because they were losing their parking spots. They wanted to be able to park right next to the building wherever they were having class. This is not like going to Toot and Totem or Pack-a-Sack where you can park in front of the door and, you know, walk all of 10 feet, get your stuff and resume your trip or whatever. Now you have to park in a parking lot that is more than likely on the perimeter of campus. And then you got to walk a little bit.
Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned those pedestrian malls because I think they're beautiful. One, I think they're such an easy way to add third places. And we can talk more about third places later. But this idea that sneaking in human transportation of activity, of having to walk that last mile, to bike that last mile, it's a way that we can sneak in that extra exercise without having to go to the gym to exercise. You know, one of the biggest pandemics right now in America is obesity and diabetes. And again, I think it's because we don't walk, we don't bike. You know, we wake up, we sit in our car, we drive the 20 minutes to work, we sit on our desks all day at work, then we get back in our cars for another 20 minutes. And then we sit on our couch and, you know, we're sedentary. Like that is the disease of modern Americans and sneaking in those little bit of walking or biking is part of what makes us human. You know, we're evolved to move. We weren't evolved to sit all the time.
Every step counts.
Every step counts.
Most of us have a smartphone in our pocket or purse that has an app on it that is just silently keeping track of all this stuff anyway.
Yeah.
Depending on your stride, I can get 10,000 steps for 4.5 miles,
That's pretty good.
So it's not hard to rack up those miles. And even if I have to make more of a conscious effort, like go for a walk during lunch or something, I got campus here. I just go out and do my lap around campus and get a little exercise, clear my head, and I come back and I'm ready to work.
And think how different that would have been, you know, several years ago before the pedestrian malls. Like, where are you supposed to walk? Is walking inches away from speeding cars a way to relax and rejuvenate? No, of course not. And I think that's, as we think about, you know, retrofitting, as you mentioned earlier, the solution isn't to simply slap a bike lane or bigger sidewalks on every street. No, we want to make our streets for people that are inviting, that are peaceful, that are calm. Much like you mentioned earlier, even the interior streets on campus, you know, cars are still allowed on many of them, but they've got to go pretty slow.
America right now, as you mentioned, is bigger than it's ever been. 40% of Americans are obese.
Yeah, crazy.
That is very problematic. And it's going to lead to a lot more health problems down the road.
Absolutely.
And so how do you see the role of PATH in maybe helping bringing down that percentage, at least locally?
Yeah. So the first thing that we're trying to do, you know, being a grassroots movement, is we're just trying to help people remember what it was like to ride a bike. Remember what it's like to be a human being outside. And so we have a couple of monthly, just leisurely bike rides. We have one right here in Canyon where we just ride around the kind of connecting the major schools. And then we also are starting one in Amarillo. We're going to be riding with First Friday as part of the Arts in the Sunset. The other thing we've got going on is we have a couple parades that we're going to be participating in. We have one coming up for Cinco de Mayo. We've been invited to participate in their parade, and everyone is welcome to join with us. Well, I guess by the time this airs, we'll have already had that parade, but that is something we've got coming up. And that's the first step, is just, hey, it's okay to ride your bike. And I think that's part of the issue, is as I've been talking to people, it's like, oh, just like you mentioned, I remember riding my bike to school. What happened? Let's get back to that. Let's revitalize that idea, that spirit, the energy of cycling, and just like I said, just being outside. And then from there, we can start to recognize, hey, it would be a lot easier for me to bike to Walmart here if there was an access way from the neighborhoods to the Walmart. Right now, in order to go to the Walmart right here in Canyon, you kind of have to jump on Hunsley, and that's not a great place for people, but there's the neighborhood right behind it. Man, that would be so nice if there was an access way for people to walk or bike to, you know, Walmart or United or any of the other local shops we have here.
I think one thing that we need to work on is just educating people about that it's okay to be on foot or on bike. Numerous times when I've been out walking, I'll have people stop. They'll be driving along and they're like, do you need a ride somewhere? It's like, no, I don't need a ride. I mean, I don't say it rudely, but I'm walking because I want to walk. I walk to the brewery sometimes. It's 1.2 miles from office to tap room. That's great. I like walking, but I've had people tell me, I saw you walking. It's like, it's okay.
It's so funny you say that, because I, even as an advocate, I still have that mentality sometimes where I see someone out walking. They don't seem to be in distress, but I'm like, should I pull over and help them? In fact, when I first moved to Dallas, I was in we only had one vehicle at the time. So my only option when I was the one without the vehicle was to walk. And so I guess this shows how far long ago this was. I was returning my Redbox movies and walking down the street, and someone called the police on me because I was carrying some grocery bags, you know, back home, and they thought I had robbed a bank.
That's hilarious.
And so the officer pulled, like, three officers, you know, cars pulled up, and they're like, you know, you met the exact description of this bank robber, but we haven't had any robberies reported. So I was like, is it a crime to walk around here? Like, I didn't do anything, but yes, the perception that we have of people that are walking or cycling, it's different, especially when we're in our cars. But when it's interesting, like, you don't typically wave to other people in another vehicle, right? I know that the Jeep guys have their Jeep wave or whatever, but typically I'm not waving hi to every other car that I pass. But on cyclists, when I'm riding my bike and I'm coming on bike, I wave to other cyclists. I wave to my neighbors. It's definitely a different perception when you are on foot or on your bike as opposed to in your vehicle looking at other people.
Of course, a big part of the problem is that our lives are so busy these days, and it's easy to fall into the trap of thinking, I don't have time for this anymore. And how do we crawl out of that?
That's a great question, Nick. And I think I can sympathize with that because, yes, you know, I talking about my son and trying to get him to everywhere. But then I stopped to realize, what life am I missing by choosing to take a car, a personal vehicle? As an example, right now in Amarillo, the average commute is 4 miles or about 15 minutes. To do that same 4 miles on my bike, let's just round up, probably say 25 to 30 minutes. So that extra 10 minutes to go someplace on my bike is probably 10 minutes more of life that I will get back as opposed to being sedentary in my car. You know, like we mentioned previously, it's that way to sneak in a little bit of extra movement that really makes me a healthier physically, mentally, and then of course financially too, because now I'm taking my bike that's powered by tacos as opposed to taking my car that I think AAA says the average car owner spends $9,000 a year on just transportation maintenance. So yes, is life busy? Of course it is. Am I going to outpace a car? No, but I think the extra 5 to 15 minutes to go someplace is worth it.
When we come back, we'll take a look at the goals of PATH and maybe a little bit more about the umbrella organization, Strong Towns, and some of the longer-term activities that PATH has planned for the Amarillo and Canyon area.
Life sometimes has a way of interfering with our university education. Marriage, family, work, any or all of these can cause us to hit the pause button on our degree, with hopes of one day finishing it. The only problem is that returning to campus can get a lot harder when you're no longer 20 years old. And that's precisely why we launched our online BBA, with majors in accounting, finance, general business, marketing, management, human resource management, and computer information systems. Available completely online. You can return to school without having to step foot on campus, or maybe you want to transfer in from a two-year program elsewhere, but once again, are not able to attend face-to-face. Our online offerings are for you as well. We can help you finish your degree and climb higher on your career ladder, at your pace and in your time. We're AACSB accredited and among the most elite of business schools around the world. Reach for the stars and do it with a WTBBA in hand. For more info, find us at wtmu.edu/COB or call 806-651-2525.
So Chris, tell us, what are your goals?
Let me tell you my dream for PATH, my vision of what I would love for Canyon and Amarillo, and then how that fits in with PATH. What I want to do is I want to be able to walk or bike out my front door without first having to look at a map to find the safest route so I don't become roadkill. I recently, from my house, I live in Amarillo, so from my house to Amarillo City Hall is about 7 miles. A little bit further than, you know, maybe I would want to do, but committing to do it. It took me 40 minutes to get there. Compared that to my 30 minute in my car. So again, sticking with my 10 to 15 minutes extra. But I probably spent 30 minutes plotting on a map to figure out how to get, like, no joke, going through Google, getting Street View. Okay, is that actually a safe place for me? Like, that is, to me, that's just a sign that our system has failed us, that we can't be human beings and go outside without having to put on, like, you know, safety map of where to go. And to me, that is just insane and just unfortunate. And so my dream is, yeah, that anybody, anywhere can go outside and be a human being and go where they want to go. And so PATH's mission is to do just that. We've been advocating for obviously a more cycling and pedestrian infrastructure, but also trying to help our communities and our cities see from a financial perspective on how important these things are, not just from a physical, not just recreational, right? We're not the just recreational cyclists. So, you know, we're not wearing out there on our spandex or Lycra, you know, trying to race down the street. Not that there's anything wrong with it. I happen to be one of those guys, but we're advocating for the normal everyday person to be able to comfortably and safely bike or walk to the grocery store a mile or two from their house.
I've found that just being out there and being seen a lot can have a calming effect on traffic. Now, as I mentioned, I live out in the country, so everybody out there knows that I'm that crazy guy who's walking every day on all the roads out there, and they all wave at me now. Mm-hmm. Even the school bus driver in the afternoon waves at me, and people slow down and they get way over. I never noticed that before until I actually started walking out there. Yeah. My presence, my repeated presence, has had a good effect. And now I've seen some of my neighbors out there walking, and that's great. We have somehow created a rural walkable community, which is a good
thing. That's so great. Yeah. As a fellow cyclist, I'm sure you're familiar with the idiom N plus one. And so for those that aren't, N plus one for cyclists often refers to the number of bikes you have is N. And so the number of bikes you should have is N plus one. So you're always one bike short. And flipping that around a little bit, the safest way to make another person that's walking or another person that's cycling safer is to add one more person. So if you want to be a safer cyclist, N plus one, you plus one more person, plus one more person, plus one more person. And so, yes, what you're seeing is exactly what we are trying to do at PATH is, hey, it is okay to walk or bike out here. And we're hoping that by having our monthly rides, we can kind of spark that and gain and kind of show people, yes, we can do this. And maybe it's a little bit of incremental steps. Maybe it's just the three, you know, you and me this week, but maybe next week there'll be a third person and then there'll be five of us. And then as we get more and more, we can really help this movement. And again, the more people that we get doing this, kind of, I want to say the more eyes on the road that we are, street that we have, and then we can help recognize how would this be safer. Because maybe you and I might be comfortable biking those 4 miles to school right now, but maybe our neighbor isn't. Well, what would make it more enticing for our neighbor to join? Is it because, you know, there's not a gap in the fence? Again, like, you know, talking about Walmart, maybe they aren't comfortable going on Hunsley. Well, if we had that neighborhood connection, maybe they would be. And so, yes, N plus one, the more cyclists, the more walkers that we have, the better for everybody.
And I like the idea that you can accomplish this without spending a nickel.
Yeah. We haven't even talked about really, I mean, we briefly talked about budgets and budget restraints, but I think budget restraints are almost a good thing because it really helps us force us to think about what needs to happen. It's not like, oh, let's dream up this huge, wonderful bike city utopia. We don't have that money. But you know what we can do? We can throw down some paint. We can throw down some, like I mentioned, very temporary things where I've seen hay bales and pallets and flower pots, just things to help change what our physical environment looks like and how we experience it.
Have you ever been to Celebration, Florida?
I have not, no.
You need to. It is. It was designed and developed by Disney originally. They're no longer a part of it, but it is a fairly new community that was built to be user-friendly for everybody, pedestrians, bicyclists, cars, whatever. And it's a great place to visit. It is kind of utopian, and it shows what can be done if there are new developments, new communities coming basically from scratch.
It's so interesting that while I'm not familiar with Celebration Florida, it's interesting you mentioned that they are, you know, designed by Disneyland engineers, because Disneyland is actually a great place or great example of what a walking place could look like. We just happen to have gone to Disneyland last year as a family, and it's so great where you can walk. I mean, you walk everywhere. There is the railway if you want to kind of jump places really quickly. And you can still, there are still places where, you know, obviously the staff has vehicles to drive around, but it's a place that you can walk and be a human being and still explore and have fun. And I think if we applied some of those same principles here, especially like right here in the square and in campus area, the whole place would just be a vibrant, people-oriented place where everyone can walk and bike and be free.
I've seen this in Europe before. I walked all over Paris, and I understand Paris has actually made great strides in the last few years, becoming even better. Brussels, Belgium, I couldn't tell you how many miles I walked there. But the best one of all was Amsterdam, mm-hmm. where there are more bikes than there are cars.
Yeah.
And I know cynics might say, oh, it's because the gas is so expensive or whatever, but it's just part of their lifestyle.
Yeah, absolutely. And both of those, both you mentioned Paris, I believe in the past like 5 years, in fact, the governor of Paris just talked about how she believes that she's doing the right thing, that she's getting a lot of pushback, like you mentioned about the pedestrian malls, but that overall it is the right decision because it's making people happier. It's improving, like I said, the health physically, mentally, it's improving the businesses, the local economy. You mentioned Amsterdam. It wasn't until the 70s, they were kind of on the same path as the rest of Western society, very car-centric, but they started to recognize this pattern much earlier than the rest of us, and they have changed that pattern. And now, yes, now they're the if there's a place I want to go visit, it's definitely Amsterdam to go experience that, because all I see is the YouTube videos and how this is the place to go and to model after. But
I rented a bike one afternoon when I was there, and being the social media nerd that I am, I had a selfie stick with me. I put my phone in it and did a Facebook Live video.
Oh, nice.
While riding a bicycle through Amsterdam.
Oh.
And it was great fun. I'm sure people on the sidewalk were looking at me because I'm narrating.
Crazy American.
Yeah, crazy American. But I was having the time of my life.
Yeah.
And the nice thing is all the vehicles going around me gave me a wide berth because they were used to it.
Yeah.
They were just simply used to seeing other people out doing this. It was an accepted form of transportation.
And again, like we talked about a little bit ago, it's this idea, this almost cultural shift that, yeah, seeing somebody outside their car on the side of the road is a reason to be of concern, of alarm. And yeah, so what a great place to.
So have you had any challenges or resistance yet or pushback?
No. I think, one, it's it's very easy to invite people to go for a bike ride. That's probably my favorite part about this, is that I'm not trying to get people to donate money or, you know, sign their life away for, you know, whatever. It's, hey, go ride your bike. And if you want, come join us and ride our bikes together. Like that's the invitation to everybody. Now, where we start to see some of that pushback is, like we talked about, it's money and the how. You know, what is the next step? And to be honest, I am still learning that myself. And that's where I really hope that as we meet more and more people, we get better ideas, because I don't know what challenges you face, you know, biking here to campus. Well, let's talk about that. How can we address that? What is the next small thing that we can do? And I think that's where we're kind of starting to see this pushback, but that's where we see that concern of the how. And as we've been talking with various city members, everyone seems very excited and willing to help. It's just helping get that political movement, making the right connections, making the right contacts.
So when you have these little city events, like you mentioned, riding from the square in mm-hmm. Canyon, or I know you've got an event in the barrio coming up, do you invite city leaders?
I haven't yet, but that is a great, great idea that we just recently were suggested. And definitely will be, and especially with the new election coming around, we'll definitely be reaching out to new, or at least in Amarillo, the new city council members and mayor, if and however they may change.
I have a hunch that some people might be reluctant to hop on a bike or something to enjoy their town, because they think that it's going to be a race. And it doesn't have to be a race. It can really be about fun. I know when my daughters were young, I had a tandem bicycle with towing a trailer, and you know what we did? We rode from the country to town. But I had to sugarcoat it a little bit. There was a reason. We went to the playground.
Ooh.
And then we got ice cream.
Nice.
On the way back. And the kids loved that. And what I tried to instill in them was the idea that we don't have to drive everywhere. We can ride a bike, even, and it was 7 miles from my house to the playground, but it was worth it. Of course, the old man was doing all the heavy pedaling, but that's okay. They had fun, and I hope that I was just planting some seeds.
And a couple things there I want to talk on. One, 7 miles is pretty impressive on a tandem and Holly. That's great. But now, for those that maybe are a little nervous about cycling, there are e-bikes now that are relatively cheap. For a couple hundred bucks, you can get a pretty decent e-bike these days. And that really can open up your horizons on how far you can go. That 7 miles, we used to live just outside Canyon. And so going into town and back, I guess it was 6 miles. But going up those hills was a little challenge.
Yeah.
I would have appreciated an e-bike then. But yeah, you talk about like how far things are, and we don't have to drive everywhere. I think of my family and our closest. We've got 3 grocery stores near us, and I think each of them is less than a mile away, and the other two are, you know, less, mile and a half-ish or so. It's intimidating to cross the street to go to my local grocery store that is literally next to my neighborhood. And like, I want to walk there. I want to bike there. But man, it is so much easier. No, I don't say easier. It's so much more. I don't even want to say the word convenient. It's just, it feels safer. Like it's the right thing to do to drive. It's like, why do I feel the need to drive my car literally less than 2 minutes away from my house? And it really is all about how, bringing this all back together, how we design our streets and our cities. On that same, what's even more frustrating, to cross the street to the grocery store from my neighborhood, there is a crosswalk. And I've seen on multiple times where you'll have somebody standing on one end waiting to cross and cars won't stop. And so, yeah, we simply discourage people from doing anything other than driving.
Have you had any victories yet?
Yeah. So two great things that I want to talk about is Bike Month. Both Canyon and Amarillo have acknowledged, well, as when this podcast released, Canyon will have acknowledged Bike Month, but Amarillo has already acknowledged Bike Month, and Canyon will do so already, will do so also. The Bike Month is May, and within Bike Month is several other fun days. May 7th is Bike and Roll to School Day. And May 12th through the 16th is Bike to Work Week. So to me, that's as silly as those things might be, to me, those are big victories of, hey, how do we get the cities to recognize, you know, build this motion, this movement of that cycling is fun. And I think that to me, that's a big win.
And I like the fact that PATH is completely non-confrontational or anything like that. You're not here to stir the pot. You're just out to encourage people to get outside.
Yeah. You know, I haven't seen this yet, but I know often one of the concerns is, oh, you're going to take away our car lanes for bike lanes or whatever the case may be. We're not anti-cars. Like, you know, we both mentioned earlier, we both own cars. And as I currently foresee it, I will have to own a car for places to go. But often we can reduce how wide our street lanes, the actual lanes themselves, not the actual width of the streets, but the actual lanes. And that would accommodate a lot of space for either a bike lane or wider sidewalks. And that also helps with how people drive on them. Right now, I'm going to use 4th Street right here as an example in Canyon. It's 4 lanes. You got 2 lanes each direction, but man, those are some big, big lanes. I mean, you could probably squeeze 2 more in there if you wanted to. And that's including the parking on both sides. But if we narrowed those down from, I believe they're 12 feet wide right now, which is the standard for a freeway. So talking about how our physical environment impacts how we behave, if we design our street lanes to look like highways, people treat them like highways. So the speed limit there is 30. When I go 30, I often get passed. But that's because the street is just really wide and it invites people to go. So, you know, we can shrink those lanes down from 12 to 10, and that gives us 4 feet extra. That's a little bit short of a bike lane, but that gives us wiggle room to play with something rather than keeping them as wide as they are. And we can do the same thing. Amarillo standards in most of our streets are the same, where you've got 12 feet lanes and then you've got a huge 14 or 16 foot median. Man, if you shrank all those down, you would have tons of space for a bike lane on both sides. And the best thing is by making those lanes a little bit shorter, excuse me, a little bit more narrow, it encourages people to slow down and actually obey the speed limit. So now we are making space for people and we're making traffic safer by slowing people down.
One thing that I've encountered in 40 plus years of cycling is the old argument, and it's a tired one, is that, well, cyclists don't pay taxes. And of course we do. And they never direct that comment at pedestrians. I don't know, are pedestrians, you know, just given a free pass just because, but why pick on, you know,
cyclists?
Just them. And the answer is pretty simple. Part of our highway budgets are funded by gas taxes. The federal portion of your gas tax pays for the freeways. But for state and local highways, only 26% of that funding comes from gas taxes.
Yeah, I've heard several times that gas tax really isn't a great way to – it is not maintaining or building stuff. It's very little of gas tax does much.
When we all pay the other taxes, sales tax, property tax, income tax in other states, not Texas, but we're all paying taxes one way or another. And that is how state and local roads and highways are built and maintained.
And, you know, so that is actually an argument that I've heard, but I'm going to flip that, because rather than thinking of, oh, we don't pay taxes for that, what we are doing is we are subsidizing people to use their personal vehicle. Just recently, last year, Canyon had this State of the City, which was a great meeting. I don't know if you were able to go to that or hear from that. But in that, they talked about how much of our city budget goes to simply maintaining streets. It was a scary amount. A large percentage of our tax dollars goes to making it so we can drive cars fast. On the reverse, communities that instead focus on the human size transportation, allowing people to walk and bike, they're spending more. Some studies have shown that they are spending up to 40% more than those that drive. We talk about how, you know, we all end up paying taxes somehow. Well, I would rather our dollars go to fueling our local economies and shops and stores rather than repaving our streets every year.
When we come back, we'll talk about the community benefits of being more walkable and bikeable.
The MBA is the most popular graduate degree in the United States, and with good reason. It leads to better jobs, promotions, and salary increases. At the Paul and Virginia Engler College of Business at West Texas A&M University, our MBA program is entirely online for when you're ready to make that move. With as few as 31 credit hours and specializations offered in 5 areas, you can fast-track your career in as little as 18 months. Whether you're looking for a promotion or initial job placement, you'll stand head and shoulders above the competition. And because we've been teaching online since 1997, we're not the new kids on the block. Trust your education and career to dedicated faculty who are not only experts in their fields, but also old pros in the online arena. Our consistently high rankings say it all. A GMAT waiver is available. We're AA CSB accredited and among the most elite of business schools around the world. Reach for the stars and do it with a WT MBA in hand. For more information, find us at wtamu.edu/COB or call 806-651-2500. From the Texas Panhandle to the world, we're here to help you reach those stars.
Chris, what are the benefits of all this? I mean, obviously, you have to be a salesman here to convince city leaders as well as the residents that this is a good thing and we're all friendly people. We're not mean. We're not trying to make people do something differently or cost them a bunch of money or anything. What are the benefits, the tangible benefits?
There's a ton of benefits. The most obvious one, of course, is better exercise. And with that, all of the benefits that go along with that. One of the most surprising ones that I just recently learned about is that those that regularly commute via bike or walk have a higher cancer survival rate, 30-something% higher, which is, except that was new to me. I thought that was very interesting. But of course, cardiovascular, diabetes, obesity rates, all those things are improved by walking or cycling. And then on top of that, mental. We talked briefly about child development. You know, my son having the freedom, the autonomy to go place, or he doesn't have that autonomy because we're kind of trapped in this car place. I think we miss out on that childhood development of gradually allowing them to gain more and more freedom. As I've been expanding my cycle commute radius, I started with a 2025. I started my commitment of anything that within 3 miles of my house, I was going to bike to. And it's gotten progressively bigger. And I can feel that sense of freedom increasing. So I can only imagine as a child what that would be like too, of, hey, I can bike down the street Now I can bike to my school. Now I can bike to the corner store. And that's obviously a huge development or benefit. The other benefit that I really love from a community perspective is the fact is that very concept of community. When we're in our cars, we're separated from our neighbors with glass and metal. But when we're on our bikes, when we're on our foot, we're actually part of our community. I tease people, when we're in our cars, we're exchanging negative hand gestures. But when I'm walking or biking, I'm waving to my neighbors and they wave back. And that is that sense of community that I really enjoy. And I love that I can bike, from my house through all the neighborhoods to wherever I'm going. And I know that I'm generally going to be greeted with a wave or a smile. And I think that is just so wonderful.
You mentioned the health benefits, it's going to help us with our weight and things like that. I find it's also good for our mental health.
Absolutely.
When I go for a walk or a bike ride, I not only solve all the world's problems in my head, but I remember all the things I forgot to do earlier the yes. same day. And my mind can wander and I can think freely. And if I left the house stressed out about something, upset about whatever happened, by the time I get home, I'm over it.
I love that. I used to tell my wife that, hey, if I'm feeling cranky, ask me the last time I went biking, because if it's been a week or two, then that's probably why I'm cranky, because I haven't gotten outside. So get sneaking those in. And just think about the reverse of that. Driving sucks. Like, nobody goes for a car drive and thinks, oh, I feel so rejuvenated and stress-free. It's often a stressful experience. We're constantly watching out and on alert. And yeah, it's usually, especially for commuting, right? Not a pleasant experience.
Well, once upon a time, we could go for a Sunday drive and accomplish just that. But yeah, it doesn't happen that way anymore. You get in your little cage and suddenly now you're a NASCAR driver.
Yeah.
You're trying to win a race.
Yeah. And, what's great about this is as we give more people more options to choose how they travel, whether, it's bike or foot or their car or public transit, the more options there are, the better it is for everyone. So maybe now and right now in your car, you're competing against all the other car drivers. But by making our streets safer, it's actually going to make car driving experience better also.
I like the scooters we have on campus. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know you're not really getting any exercise necessarily, but you're still outside.
Yeah.
And you're not driving from the dorm to class or from your apartment or whatever. These scooters are great for that last mile.
Absolutely.
Part.
Absolutely.
You can get from door to door just fine. You're one less car, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, we talked about other benefits. I mean, that's absolutely one of them. The more people that are biking, the less cars there are, and so therefore the less traffic. And so when you are driving, it's a better experience. And then with that, there comes all sorts of other things for the city benefits. We talked about, we talked earlier about those that walk or bike near the shops can actually window shop a little bit more and they spend more. I mentioned earlier that, couple of different studies that those that cycle spend more on monthly. And I think keyword here is local shops. So it's spurring that local economy. My favorite part of that study is that bars that are more walkable and bikeable, those patrons spend 50% more. And I'm like, what a great way to solve drunk driving. Let's put a bike rack and a bike lane heading to your local shop or your local bar. And then they spend more and then we don't have to worry about, drunk driving.
So where do you see PATH in 5 years?
Oh, man. It's hard for me to think about the city as an overall, like what the city would look like and what we would hope to have accomplished in that time. I use some more personal kind of like goals. I talked about my vision of, everybody can walk out their front door without having to find a safety route. I will have known that we have done a successful job and that we will have started on this progress, on this journey, when my wife is comfortable joining me on these bike rides. Because right now she's terrified, you know, and I think if I can get my wife to join me on these things, that's the person that I am trying to share this dream with. Because right now she's having a hard time seeing what could be. And that's what, to me, I think PATH is all about, is sharing and selling this dream of what could be. And so when she is comfortable biking with me to the grocery store, and that's her preferred method over driving, then I know that PATH has done the right thing.
My guest today has been Chris Pittman, director and founder of PATH here in the Amarillo and Canyon area. Thanks for being on the show, Chris. I really appreciate it. This has been a fun conversation for me. Everyone, lace up your shoes or strap on a helmet and get out there. Fade to black and roll credits. You've been listening to Buff Speak from the Paul and Virginia Engler College of Business at West Texas A&M University. Our executive producer is Justin Lovell, and Allison Hunter is our associate producer. Our co-editors are Maverick Evans and Paul Torres. Lindsay Bjork is our director of marketing and outreach initiatives, which includes overseeing Buff Speak. Dr. Jeffrey Babb is director of accreditation and is our technical consultant. Finally, Dr. Amjad Abdulat is dean of the college. You can find us online at wtamu.edu/COB for more information about our programs. Be sure to check out our many academic offerings. Come for the quality, stay for the small classes, affordable tuition, and friendly, approachable professors. And look online at our faculty blog, profspeak.com, for more insights. You can listen to Buff Speak on your favorite podcast portal, as well as on our website, buffspeak.biz. And if you like what you've been hearing, don't be afraid to share us with your friends, colleagues, and family. Word of mouth has always been the best form of advertising. Until next time, love one another. For the Paul and Virginia Engler College of Business at West Texas A&M University, I am Dr. Nick Gerlich. And as always, go Buffs! Buff Speak.